C-O-L-G-A-T-E.
Colgate Shave Cream presents Mr. H.V. Coltonborn pinch hitting for Bill Stern.
Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream man, is far away. He's visiting army camps along the way. For the next 2 weeks till Bill gets back, to keep you posted on the facts, we'll bring you Mr. Coltonborn.
Mr. Coltonborn will speak to you in just a moment. But first, a word of explanation. Bill Stern is away on his annual vacation. During these next two Friday nights, while Bill is away, Colgate has asked Mr. H.B. Coltonborn to pinch hit for Bill. But before we present Mr. Coltonborn, here are a few words for men. On the Colgate Brushless Champion team are stars of baseball, football, tennis, billiards, bowling, and golf. True, they perform in different sports, but all have the same stubble trouble, wiry whiskers. And all these great sports stars are solving their shaving problems with Colgate Brushless Shave Cream. Why? Well, here's the way Gene Saracen, famous golf champ, put it when he recently wrote Bill Stern.
Dear Bill, shaving used to be like a shellacking for my face because I have a sensitive skin and tough whiskers. But I'll never forget my first shave with Colgate Brushless Shave Cream. My face came through feeling like $1 million. That cream softened my whiskers and let me shave close and clean without snagging. Kind regards, Gene Saracen.
Hear that, men? Colgate Brushless Shave Cream leaves a champion golfer skin feeling like $1 million. Sure, it will do the same for you. It's made for all you men with that combination of tough whiskers planted in a tender skin. Listen, man, Colgate Brushless conditions your skin for a no-snag, no-pull performance with no smutting afterwards. And then at the fast finish, you rinse it off your face and razor jiffy quick. If Colgate Brushless Shave Cream doesn't do all this to your satisfaction, send the top of the carton to Bill Stern, care of Colgate, Jersey City's own 2 New Jersey, and you'll get double your money back. Fair enough? Then get a jumbo jar of Colgate Brushless Shave Cream tonight. And now, Mr. H.V. Coltonborn.
Good evening, everybody. To keep Bill Stern happy, here are a few late baseball scores. Night games, National League, St. Louis 14, New York 3. That's the first game of a doubleheader. American League. Philadelphia 1, St. Louis 0 in the 4th inning. Chicago 2, Washington 2 in the 7th inning. Here is a quick survey of tomorrow's headlines. The 3rd Pacific Fleet, with Admiral Halsey in personal command, is again in action. It is sending 1,000 airplanes against 25 Japanese air bases and other military installations in northern Hokkaido. This is farthest north for the 3rd Fleet. A direct report from an NBC correspondent with the fleet says the weather is thick. Bombs were dropped by instruments. Today, just as was the case 5 days ago near Tokyo, there has been no Japanese reaction on the sea or in the air. Bombing of Japan surrounding waters continues. A British fleet has raided the Nicobar Islands and may be preparing a landing en route to Singapore. President Truman lands at Antwerp, Belgium tomorrow on his way to the Big Three conference in Berlin. British warships are escorting a ship through the channel. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee has approved the United Nations Charter without a single dissenting vote. Russia and China have completed important negotiations in Moscow. They may result in a united China with larger Russian influence on the consolidated government. The United States tonight accepted full responsibility for the sinking April 1st of the Japanese relief ship Awa Maru. Disciplinary action has been taken against the American submarine commander, whose order to torpedo the vessel cost more than 1,000 Japanese lives. The Awa Maru was operating under a safe conduct to deliver relief supplies for Allied prisoners. The first step toward state control of all means of production in Germany has been taken in Berlin. A sweeping decree announced today confiscates all plants or properties. Similar seizures are expected to extend throughout Russian-occupied Germany. The city government, which announced the decree, has been working directly under the Russians. Presumably, the property to be taken over will be used and operated by government bodies. It is a first step in placing Germany under a system of state socialism. In those parts of Germany claimed by Poland, all property was confiscated by the state some time ago. General Anders, commander of the 2nd Polish Corps, which has been fighting for the Allies in Italy, today told his men, "If you return to Poland, you do not go to Poland. You go to Russia. You go not to a free life, but to captivity and slavery." Most American Poles believe that what General Anders said today is true. The most immediate problem facing the Big Three, when they meet in Berlin next week, is how to build Germany up while holding Germany down. We must keep Germany weak so that she cannot start another war, yet we must keep Germany strong enough to be self-supporting. Most of us hate Germany for Nazi crimes. Most of us fear Germany because of her aggressive wars. Yet if we hate and fear rather than do cold calculation to guide our decisions, we will only recreate the kind of Germany we hate and fear. Every sober student of the German problem agrees that we must permit Germans to rebuild their peacetime industry. This can only be done successfully if some kind of a unified overall administration of Germany is now created in Berlin. Word comes today from Frankfurt, Germany, that the American authorities there see no way of avoiding famine in Germany this winter. No crops were planted in most of East Prussia and Pomerania, the big food-producing areas. They were overrun by war. Crops were neglected in most other farm areas. Because of the war, there are few draft animals. There is little farm machinery, gasoline, or fertilizer. Before the war, only one-fifth of Germany's population was engaged in agriculture. Food imports were always essential. Today, Germany must import 1,000 of the 2,000 daily calories, which are the necessary minimum to sustain life. Average daily requirements are over 3,000 calories. The Russians affix 2,000 calories as the daily allotment for Germans in their zone, but Allied reporters tell us actual food deliveries are much lower. We have been more generous in our zone of occupation. So far, the American army has looked after the feeding, but from now on, the Germans are supposed to feed themselves. How they are to do it in those areas like the Ruhr, where little food is raised, has not been explained. This means that we will soon begin to hear of food riots and how American doughboys share their rations with German children. No rules against fraternization are likely to prevent that. It is not a pleasant prospect that our food shortage at home will be aggravated by demands for food from our recent enemies, the people of Germany, Austria, and Italy. Yet, if we refuse to supply food, it means more chaos in a war-torn, shell-shocked Europe. The millions of Europe are already desperate. Hunger will make them a ready prey to anarchy or communism. We are all agreed that Germans must be punished, but Jacob Weiner, editor of the Journal of Political Economy, wants us to punish Germans without punishing ourselves. He says, insofar as it is just and expedient that the German people shall suffer collective economic and political penalties for its sins, this will result from total defeat in war and from the measures we should take against the risk of German peace-breaking. He says if we want the German people to plan for peace instead of for war, we must give them a chance to maintain a decent standard of living, not for their sake, but for ours. He points out in this month's Foreign Affairs that any impairment of German productive capacity means economic injury to the rest of the world. France is today in desperate need of Ruhr coal. Peace in France this winter depends on coal. But to supply France with coal, Germans must have more food, more transport, more machinery. The sooner they get it, the more coal they can supply. The sober experts of the Brookings Institute have also reported on the need of restoring German trade. They say, quote, German trade, both in imports and exports, is of great importance, not only to border countries, but to the world as a whole. Experience since World War I has clearly demonstrated the disastrous effects of depression in Germany upon the economic life of other countries. This week's New Republic says, to condemn the German people to live without heavy industries would be to create a poorhouse in the center of Europe which would infect the whole body of that continent. All this is no sentimental wish-wash. It's cold, hard sense. But it doesn't jibe completely with those who want to make Germany overnight into an agricultural country. Europe already has too many agricultural areas, too few industrial areas. That is why we provided relief for Germany during the inflation period of the 20s and again in the early 30s. But then we didn't have the sense or the courage to keep Hitler from using our dollars and our supplies to prepare for war. I am convinced that the best way to keep German industry geared for peace is through quiet, unobtrusive participation in both ownership and management. That is how the international cartels kept track of other countries. They put in a few unobtrusive people who were in the key spots and who knew exactly what was going on. Well, we can certainly now do the same thing in every industrial plant of any importance in Germany. The Russians have begun to do it in their own way by confiscating all property. But presumably, that is not the way that we would like to do it. The sooner we punish the war criminals and get that out of the way, the better. And the sooner we restore transport, industry, and agriculture throughout the areas occupied by all the Allies, the better. We have already turned a large part of Europe over to Russia and to communism, unless we can now agree with Russia on a sensible administration of Germany as a whole. Russia and communism will have taken them over within 6 months. For whatever else Russia may not have, she does have a policy. And that policy is to make as much of Europe communist as she possibly can. Look at the map of Europe, and you'll see how well she's done within the last 6 months. So far, we have no policy, except the general idea of keeping Germany down. John J. McCloy, Assistant Secretary of War, who has had much to do with German affairs, said to a New York Tribune reporter yesterday that we must unify German economy to prevent German starvation and inter-Allied quarrels. At the present time, Russia bars American military and diplomatic officials even from those areas of Germany which we conquered and which we turned over to the Russians. There is no transport and no communication between the Russian and American zones of occupation. Yet these separated German areas are completely interdependent for food, for raw materials, and for supplies. If the Big Three cannot now agree on unifying conquered Germany, they will never agree on anything else that is really worth doing. Assistant Secretary of War McCloy says it is nonsense to talk about German industry as though it is all ready for another war. German plants, he says, are intact only here or there. Broadly speaking, industry is down and almost out. So once again, everybody and everything is waiting for a Big Three meeting to formulate policy that should have been agreed upon months ago. My one hope is that the Berlin meeting will at least produce machinery that can make and execute policy between the infrequent Big Three meetings. I am beginning to wonder whether this business of free men trying to run the world by meeting 7 days a year is ever going to work. Good night.
Thank you, Mr. Kaltenborn. Now I'm calling all paws. Yes, I'm calling all those fathers who have wiry whiskers and naturally dry, sensitive skin. Fellow dads and fellow shavers, there's a wonderful brushless shave cream made especially for you. It's Colgate Brushless Shave Cream, the shave cream of champions. It's a brushless cream that stays moist, softens the toughest beard right down to the skin line so your razor fairly skims them off, leaving your face smooth, your skin refreshed, and your disposition marvelous. What's more, Colgate Brushless rinses off your razor and face in almost nothing flat. Enjoy a real champion shave tomorrow. Get Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions, tonight. This evening, Colgate Shave Cream has presented Mr. H.B. Kaltenborn, pinch-hitting for Bill Stern. We invite you to listen again next Friday night at the same time over these same stations to H.B. Kaltenborn with his keen analysis of the news. Be with us next Friday evening and each Friday night at this time. Mr. H.B. Kaltenborn will do next Friday night's show for Bill Stern, and Bill himself will return 2 weeks from tonight.
Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream Man, is far away. He's visiting army camps along the way. And for next week till Bill gets back, to keep you posted on the facts, we'll bring you Mr. Kaltenborn, C-O-L-G-A-T-E.
Mr. Kaltenborn appears on this program through the courtesy of the Pure Oil Company.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.